Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, a World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Welcome to Turner's Take Podcast. I'm your host, Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take Newsletter. You can find me on the web at turnerstake.com, or if you're a producer, turnerstakeag.com. Work with hedgers, speculators, online trading, broker-assisted, managed futures, everything in between. If you have any questions for us or what we do here, all my contact information is in the show notes, or you can find us on that website. Alrighty, so last week was planting intentions. I was actually out of the office with my family on spring break. My kids' school district seems like the last week in March is always the spring break week and always coincides with planting intentions and the last business day of March. So if you are a farmer inclined here, you may have talked to me on Thursday. I did have my phone forwarded, and I worked on Thursday from the kitchen table. Well, I sent my wife and kids out to the pool and the beach. But, yeah, it was quite an eventful day. What did we see on Wednesday? I mean, that was Thursday. We had corn acres come in at 88 million. Market was looking for 89 million. We had soybean acres, which I thought were going to be closer to 91 million, and a lot of the trade thought that, ended up coming in at 88 million. So that was both bullish surprises. Gotta say, when we start doing the supply and demand tables, if we have 88 million acres of corn, probably means we harvest 81 million. We yield about 174, close to trend line, close enough, right? And just kind of like a normal supply and demand, ending stocks for new crop are about 1.8 billion. Now that's with a carry-in of 2.1 billion that the USDA is using. And I've seen a lot of estimates where the USDA might be maybe too high on Argentine and maybe even Brazilian corn production, which means our exports are too low. So instead of having maybe exports at 2.2 billion, maybe it should be closer to 2.4 billion on exports. Now, it's the case, ending stocks for the United States, I mean, exports should be about 2.4 billion, which means ending stocks for the United States could very well be 2 billion or lower for old crop. If that's the case, then 88 million acres and a 174 yield, which is pretty much trend line, we should be closer to a 1.7 or maybe even a little bit low, where we start to see a 1.6 ending stocks, which is a starting off point and an estimate. So that sets up some real potential rallies during the spring and the summer. Now, the USDA has the April WASDE and to update some of the South American numbers. And then in May is the big one, where they get the supply and demand tables for new crop, where the 88 million acres come in, the trend line yield around 174, 175. And we see they're basically the demand and supply numbers for new crop. And I think we could see a number, let's call it 1.7. Between 1.7 and 1.8 to be conservative. I don't want to be, when we see that number, and that's given that old crop is now closer to 2 billion instead of 2.12 on the ending stocks. In that environment, planting delays can cause corn to go up 10, 15 cents. Summer weather rallies where you're worried about us going from an 174 to a 170 yield, all of a sudden, you know, losing 4 million bushels. Let's take a look what that would look like. If we have 88 million acres and we lose 4 million bushels, we go from a 1.8 billion carryout on new crop to a 1.4 and change. You know, if we get a real serious issue this summer and we got 165 yield at 88 million acres and a 165 yield, which isn't, you know, out of this world. I mean, you have to have some real trouble with, you know, probably with heat and lack of rain Because it really is amazing how well corn can be produced now under strenuous conditions. But let's just say we had a 165 yield on 8 million acres. Ending stocks get close to a billion. And now we're at real price rationing. We're at where July is trading over December, right? And we're in an inverse market, no longer a carry market. So 60 days ago, we were dealing before, or maybe 90 days ago, before the real issues in Argentina started to happen, we were thinking about 2.4 billion carry out for the old crop. We get 90 million acres and a trend line yield, and all of a sudden, you know, we're still at 2.4 billion in the carryout for new crop, and we're at 350, 360, 370 corn. And in the past 90 days, with the production issues in South America, the lower acres here in the United States, and the late planting, I can see rallies well into the fours for July corn. I mean, I can come up with scenarios now where July gets to 450, as Dees is at 450, and at that point we're starting to go inverse. So, not saying it's likely, I'm just saying those possibilities are now, there's now a realistic possibility, whether it be 5, 10, 15% chance of that happening. While, if you asked me 3 months ago, I would say, you know, the possibility of us getting that high in that situation happen, you know, would be so close to zero that it'd basically be nothing. So it's amazing how fast these markets can change. And in terms of like a speculator or a producer, you know, we had done those short straddles in December, like the $4 straddles, and sold 50 cents. And I am now a little concerned about getting to 450 or higher. And I don't want to ride that market being short a $4 straddle for 50 cents and worrying about my risk, which is above 450. So we went ahead and just bought some July 450 calls, thinking, you know, that if we do get that high and we have a price rationing effect and, you know, old crop will take off over new crop, that gives us protection then, or at least some protection, you know, on those rallies, and kind of cancels out the short straddle, and then the farmer still has all his bushels he can price at higher prices if we get a situation like that. I'm also a big fan of buying, and have been for a while, all right, this is something I've been talking about for a while, and I'm still a big fan of it, buying July calls, 430s, 440s, 450s, have all been going around for 3, 4, 5, 6 cents, you know, depending on how close you're getting into the market. And if we do get those big rallies, and it's May, or it's June, and corn is storming higher, and you don't know if, you know, you don't want to miss out on the rest of the rally, buying, you know, a 450 call for 5 cents, or, I mean, yesterday they were going for four, 3.5 at one point, I want to say. You know, it's easier to make that cash sale as we go in. From a spec side, I think it's an interesting play, too. It's kind of, you know, for $150 or $200 per 5,000 bushels, you can kind of have it sit in the account and see if we get a rally. So all those things, I think, are ways that, or examples that farmers can help themselves just with their marketing a little bit. Plus, if you are one of the affected, let's say there is a drought or an issue this summer, and you're one of the farms that actually lost yield, and you already contracted corn, I bet you'd, and we do get a situation where we go with a 450 or higher, I bet, you know, having a call in place there would be a nice little insurance option, you know, in terms of if you don't have the bushels, right? So I like that. I like those plays for all those. If you go to the Turner's Take Ag.com, and this is for clients, when you log in on there, in the state of the market and the supply and demand section, I'm gonna go to their website right now. You go to the supply and demand part. I have scenarios for corn, 80 million acres and 170 yield, 88 million acres, which is where we are now, and 174 yield, which is trend line. And then let's say 89 million acres and a 178 yield, which I think is not going to happen. But I just wanted to kind of put a worst-case scenario for prices on there. And you can see these carryouts. It is really something. How far it can get away from us on some of these things. So check that out when you get a chance. I think it's some good stuff on there. And that is pretty much how we're going to handle the corn market right now. One other thing that I do want to take a look at is soybeans. I'm just bringing up my tables here. On soybeans, we had, instead of 91 million acres, we had 89 million acres. And I got to tell you, I was shocked on that. You know, the carryout is still kind of high. You know, at 89 million acres and a trend line yield of 48.5, we pretty much produce just as much as we use in export next year. All right? So we're at about 550 now in an old crop carryout estimate. We go 89 million acres, 48.5 yield. We're still right there. What's kind of nice about that is as we go into planting and summer season here, if the acres are, you know, if the market starts saying acres are higher or lower, or yields are higher or lower, you then get a sense of are we going to be plus or minus from year over year stocks. So I always kind of like to know that number. Like, when do we start drawing on stocks year over year, and when do we start building on stocks year over year? And for me, it's 89 million acres and a 48.5 yield in soybeans, which is not bullish. It is not bullish. Having a carryout of over 500 million is actually kind of bearish, but here we are, prices are over 10 bucks. It's probably more to do also with the South American issues that we've had, even though Brazil's having a very good crop. Argentina has not been doing well. excuse me. One of the things we got to touch on is these Chinese tariffs in response to basically what's becoming an escalating trade war. You know, China has slapped a 25% tariff, or will put a 25% tariff on soybeans come sometime in May. Speculation is mid to late May. What that means is, let's say I am a U.S. grain merchant, you know, a big grain company, and I'm selling beans to a company in China. You know, they come over, they say, "Well, we want to buy beans." I quote them $10. Can make the numbers nice and easy here. And normally, then I would ship them to China. But what China's doing with their 25% tariff is, when I get to China and I deliver these beans, they're going to say, "Okay, for you to ship these beans and get them through the country, you got to pay a 25% tariff on that. And if they're worth $10, then you got to give us $2.50 of it." Meaning the grain company then keeps $7.50. Now, there's no way the grain company is going to do that, right? So the fear is, now, you know, the grain companies won't sell at that price, right? And the Chinese companies know that, and their incentives to go as much Brazil beans as possible. Thing is, Brazil only has so much beans, and also Brazil knows that they're not going to come to the United States because of the tariff. So prices in Brazil are actually probably going to go up, and they did go up after the announcement, because, you know, there's a what else are the Chinese going to do, right? They have to go to Brazil. And they're raising prices. What is one interesting thing is, there is, I've read some reports about, well, you know, the carryouts are going to get so large that that beans are going to come crashing down, and it could be like $8 or something like that because of the tariffs. The thing is, though, if this market was elastic, where things were very sensitive to price, if supply and demand demand was very sensitive to price, then I would kind of agree with that. Like, if this were going on in the wheat market, we'd really be up the creek right now, because no one would buy. There's absolutely no one would buy the wheat, and the wheat is so readily available all over the world that the United States ending stocks would just blow up. But as we've seen in the past, supply and the demand for soybeans is quite inelastic. Like, it doesn't matter how little soybeans we have, the crush is the crush is the crush, and it just stays. And the thing is, while exports can kind of come up and come down, exports are always price rationed, right? But someone else needs those beans, and they'll be fighting tooth or nail for it. What's interesting about that is, if South America sells out because they got to sell everything to Brazil, all the existing South American countries that don't have to worry about tariffs come to the United States. So I think there's some built-in demand there, and there's only so much room. There's only so much more Brazil can sell. They only keep like 5 million metric tons in carryout each year. 5 million metric tons, I mean, max, it's like 180 million bushels, right? I mean, 180 million bushel carryout here, beans are in the teens. So it's not like Brazil has a whole lot of or South America on a whole, they has a whole lot of capacity, or built-up capacity for, you know, for beans to keep on selling. They're going to run out soon. Now, let's imagine we're in a market where South America is running out of beans, China still needs beans, and there's this tariff. So what happens? China needs the beans because it's a fairly inelastic market. They come to the United States, say, we want your beans at $10. U.S. company's like, you know what? I'm not going to sell it to you for $10. I'm going to have to pay $250 when I get to China, and all of a sudden my profits, I'm selling this for $750. So instead, I'm going to sell it to you for $1,250. I'm not paying the tariff. You're paying the tariff. And then what does the Chinese company have to do? Are they going to all of a sudden pay $1,250 beans because the grain merchants in the United States are going to get 10 no matter what? That is usually how it goes in inelastic markets. The cost always gets passed down to the end user. In this case, higher food prices in China. So that's going to be an interesting development, because if the market is truly elastic, then yes, soybeans will go down to $8 like wheat would. But if the market is inelastic, the U.S. is not going to eat that cost. Ultimately, China's going to eat its whole tariff, because the prices in the United States, which they're willing to sell the beans, are going to go up by that same amount. Very much economic theory. I am channeling economic classes I took at NYU when I was getting my MBA in the early 2000s. So I don't know. It's one thing to talk about it in theory, you know, economics and how things really work, and then how it is in practice, right? To be totally different. It's going to be interesting, though. It'll be an interesting case study for Harvard Business School one day. Unfortunately, these things aren't just academic. It affects real people, real lives, real families. And it's something we're going to have to deal with. But I don't know. And it has to come down to the inelasticity and the scarcity of soybeans. I think these grain merchants are going to be able to pass along that tariff cost to basically the end user in China. We'll see. That is my gut right now on how things happen. But you know what? Not only the thing is, theory doesn't always matter. It's the money. What does the money trading it believe, right? If the big money trading it believes prices should go down from the tariff, then the big money in the trade will send it down. If the big money in the trade believes it should go up, you know, the money is basically votes, and it's not democratic. It's not every dollar. Every trader has $1 to vote on what way the markets are going. It's actually, you know, there's some very large traders out there that have a lot more votes than you and I, which think which way markets should go. Perfect example of that. I want to get off on a big tangent here, but new crop, old crop soybeans. You know, back in the day when it was just a bunch of fundamental floor traders before the time of screens and big New York institutions coming in, if we had a crop problem in soybeans, and let's say we had plenty of soybeans for old crop, and now we think the issue was in new crop, the new crop would take off over the old crop. Because let's say you thought you're going to have 500 million bushels in old crop, July's trading at $10, and then all of a sudden there's a new crop issue, and instead of having a 500 million carryout, it's going to be a 200 million carryout. So the old school thinking was, sell July the old crop, buy the back month, because that back month's going to be worth a lot more, because while we have enough stocks now, we're not going to have enough stocks later. So you sell the front, you buy the back, right? That was the old school trading. The money that used to rule the markets thought that way. Then when the screen came in and the New York money and the economist money came in, the guys with the PhDs and whatnot, they didn't see the market like that anymore. They saw the market as it's one continuous crop year. So if you have plenty of stocks now and you're worried about having stocks a year from now, the more important, more valuable, you know, part of it is what you have right now. And you can always, you know, because basically one in the hand is worth two in the bush. And in the same exact situation with different money, with different perspectives trading it, July Nov goes to the moon. And, you know, so when people ask me where do I think tariffs are going to send soybeans, it really depends on who's trading it, whose views they are. And, and where they think these markets should go. I think at the end of the day, in an inelastic market where soybeans are scarce, tariffs actually add on to the price. If we were in an elastic market where the commodity is not scarce, it's overly abundant, let's call it wheat, then yes, the price of the wheat in the United States would go lower by the amount of whatever that tariff is. We'll see. I don't get everything right. Don't have a crystal ball. Just can give you my opinion and why I think the way I do. But that's how I'm seeing things. So we got to. So again, with soybeans, I've said this before. I said it again. We are not selling beans short. If we're making cash sales, we're doing that at the elevator. I do like buybacks in the futures market. I don't want to buy futures. I do like future spreads, July Nov or Nov-Eve Nov, to kind of get bull spread. I think we're still at some pretty good prices there to do that as a re-ownership play. I like buying some cheap calls, you know, $11. Never know what's going to happen. Or higher, just to kind of have a little bit of long exposure if you're making sales. Or you're not worried, you may not have the crop. I like that too. But in terms of buying a put, selling a call, or just selling futures outright, I don't want to deal with a dollar margin call if things go sky high. Because I can still make the argument for $12 beans or $8 beans. And even more so now with these tariffs and how the markets are going to react to it. So if you find this kind of stuff interesting, if you think it could help you with your marketing plan, or I could either help you train the grain markets, please give me a call. My number here is 800-958-9470. You can find me on Twitter, too, at Turner's Take, or really all my contact information is in the show notes. If you go to turnerstake.ag, you can even sign up for my newsletter and request access to the site where all my supply and demand tables are. So that's going to do it for me. Hope everyone is having a good week. I'm going to shoot out an email today and tomorrow through the newsletters, and for the podcast, we'll be back next week. All right, good luck, everyone. Talk to you later.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.